You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, as BC Housing continues to move forward with a planned supportive housing unit on Alfred Avenue to open in 2028, a temporary shelter is being considered for the same location as this past winter as an interim measure in Smithers. The location on 3rd Avenue and Queen Street caused concern from nearby residents last year as the low barrier warming shelter took form. Despite concerns from the community, the operators of the shelter, Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society, said the shelter met their objectives last winter with positive results, helping several people find long-term housing and in some cases enrollment in programs for treatment of addictions. Today we speak with Billy Kennedy from the Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society about how the winter shelter fared and why Smithers needs more shelter space. Stay with us.
My name's Billy Kennedy. I'm with Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society.
Great, Billy. Thanks so much for joining us again. As I mentioned, we chatted last year when the emergency winter shelter got put up here in Smithers, and we did a piece on it. We talked to you. We talked to others. There was also a town hall that the town of Smithers hosted back then to hear some of the concerns from community, but it largely was supportive of obviously getting people off the street in the winter. So we wanted to reconnect and see how things went with the beds, with the folks that you guys helped out, and what comes next with this. So maybe tell us about how the winter went.
The winter went very well in my opinion. We set out to run a project which would keep a 24/7 safe, warm space open to folks most at risk in our community, and we achieved that. Obviously, it was a new project, and so there was a lot of learning along the way, and having multiple people living in one congregate room comes with its own sets of conflicts and challenges, but all of them we were able to work through, and we achieved our goal not only of keeping people warm and housed, but also being able to connect people to different kinds of support. So we were able to connect a lot of folks to outreach services, assist people in getting medical treatment that they might need. Quite a few of our folks managed to make it off to treatment, and we've had some great success stories that have come out of that. And some of our folks also connected to longer-term housing, be that in the private rental market or through supportive housing with Smithers Community Services. Looking back on it, I would say what I think was the greatest success, beyond obviously providing shelter and food and winter clothing for people, was the sense of community that came out of the space, because there was some real genuine friendships forged in that space. And I think like one of the things I'm proudest of with the space is the sense of warmth and community that we managed to cultivate. There was a lot of laughter and a lot of fun times, board games, movie nights, shared experiences. And that's something that those are relationships that we really look forward to sustaining over the future.
Yeah. Billy, I want to talk about some of these success stories, because I think, you know, what came out of the town hall beforehand, before the shelter started. And then also there was another town hall a couple of years ago that this issue also came up when the tent shelter in front of town hall there was erected. And it seems like a lot of people had all these concerns that bad things were going to happen. And as you pointed out, and we talked about this the first time around, you know, this was a jumping off point for people to find other help, to get long-term housing, to get off the street, get into some sort of treatment facility. or program. So maybe tell us a little about what are some of the success stories that stood out, and, you know, did that encourage others to, you know, try to get off the street and try to get their lives back together?
Yeah, that's a good question. And a lot of folks have been asking about that. I think one of the really important things to understand about housing is, like, when people are on the streets, there is so much instability in your life, and providing an initial point of stability where people have a warm place to sleep and store belongings and have a sense of where your next meal is coming from allows you to start thinking about more logistical tasks and allows you to start making connections to other services in town that might be more inaccessible when you're living in such a state of daily insecurity. And so we did have a lot of success stories. I mean, our primary mandate as a program was to just provide emergency warmth and immediate support for people's needs. But there were a large number of success stories. So we had quite a few people. I'm going to be vague because I'm trying to respect people's privacy.
Yeah.
But there were quite a few people who managed to connect to longer-term rentals in the private rental market, both locally and in other communities where they might have had family or people that they reconnected with. We had multiple people make it off to treatment programs around the province, and several success stories that have come out of that of folks who are still staying sober, have found housing. We have more than one of those individuals are now volunteering with the society, and it feels very important to them to stay connected to the community and to give back and to inspire others with their stories. And we also had we had success in terms of connecting some of our guests with supportive housing rooms at Goodacre Place.
You know, maybe Billy, tell me, what's the process with that? Because, you know, a lot of people that, you know, I spoke to beforehand, oh, they're just going to be doing drugs and smoking there, like they're having a good time. But what's the process to when people come in to the shelter? And I know that you only had a limited number of beds. Mm-hmm. So it was a small group of people in there, you know, it was eight beds. Was it eight beds?
It was 10 by the end of the winter.
10 by the end of the winter. Yeah. So, you know, a small group of people, but, you know, what's the process to have that conversation with those folks to get them to the point where they say, you know what, yeah, I need to go and get treatment, or I'm going to reconnect with my family down in Kamloops or whatnot, and I'm going to find some housing and turn things around. So, you know, what was that process like to bring people to that point where they could make those decisions to move on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're operating from a harm reduction perspective, which isn't about telling anyone what they should be doing with their life, but it's about helping people to get their basic needs met so that they can then practice their own autonomy and decide the positive steps that they would like to take in their life and then support them in meeting those needs. So meeting people where they're at for us meant seeing what immediate needs people needed support with and then doing our best to support those needs and ensure that people can stay alive and safe and get those basic needs met long enough that they can then identify which goals are important to them and which things they would like to work on. And I think taking away, like I said earlier, those questions that can be so destabilizing to someone's ability to like make longer term plans, like, am I going to be safe tonight? Where am I going to sleep? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be able to survive negative 30 weather? Will I have a hot meal? Will I have somewhere that I can get this wound looked at? Taking away those questions, which put such an immediate survival focus in someone's like daily life, means that people can then, and we found people just naturally started to bring up goals and things that they were excited about. And I think one of the primary things that was important for us was also having as many peers employed as possible, people with lived and living experience of housing insecurity, of mental health struggles of their own, of substance use. It meant that a lot of our staff were able to form deeper connections with the folks who are staying at the shelter and inspire others in a lot of cases with their stories, because it's a lot easier to see that goal, be like, I could get clean too, or I could get back into housing after I've been on the streets for 6 years. If you see someone else who's done it, who gets it, who's been there and can empathize with you and provide support in a way that feels real and feels identifiable. Yeah.
Billy, just last thing. I know now there's been some discussion of having this shelter reinstated for the coming winter, and then possibly the next winter to bridge the gap between now and when the BC housing facility on Alfred Avenue, which will house a shelter in the main floor, is built in a couple of years. So where are we at with that? What does this look like? Are you actively trying to see this shelter reinstated for this coming winter?
So this is probably a better question for BC Housing. My understanding is they have put a proposal forward to run an interim shelter at the same location where we ran our temporary winter shelter last season. There hasn't been an operator selected for that. But that is very much, I think, a process ongoing between BC Housing and the town of Smithers and the broader community who's been invited to provide feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, what's next for BV Harm Reduction Society?
Yeah, so after our shelter closed, we've transitioned back to more of a volunteer model, which is where we started. As I said, the relationships that we have with the street community in Smithers is really important to us. And so we've been staying in touch with folks and having regular check-ins. We've been going by often and checking in with people's material and support needs and doing our best to fill those gaps where we can. We've been running peer meetings this summer and several events. So we've had art days, movie nights, we've brought around hot meals. And we're really trying to keep that that sense of community and trust that we've built with folks alive. We're really concerned as a society right now with the increasingly toxic drug supply that's hitting the streets and the increased vulnerability that puts our folks who are unhoused in. Obviously, the risk of drug poisonings is increasing very significantly with substances like methamphetamine in the midst of a lot of the local street supply of drugs, and then the risks of drug poisonings get even scarier when people don't have a stable place to be. And there are also risks of exposure and that kind of thing. So we're really interested in ways that we can be a part of a community-driven harm response effort to that, the increasingly toxic supply.
All right. Well, Billy, thanks so much for sitting down again, and good luck with your endeavors, and I'm sure we'll chat again.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists. I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.